Hello everyone, this is Dr. Steve McKinlay and this is the Topics in Cyber Ethics or the Digital Ethics course, depending on which course you're enrolled in, podcast for topic 4, and we are looking at meta-ethical theory still, and this is meta-ethical theory number 3, the third. So first of all we had utilitarianism. The second meta-ethical theory was deontological ethics or duty-based ethics, and this is the final one in the series called virtue ethics. So this is the final meta-ethical theory that we'll look at. And in this podcast, I'm going to just give an introduction to virtue ethics, and then I'm going to a bit of a definition of practical wisdom and how we develop virtue. In the next podcast, I'll talk about some variations on the virtue ethics theory, and I'll also outline some objections to virtue ethics, which are obviously important for your assignment, but also important to know that some people, not everyone agrees with virtue ethics, just as not everyone agrees with utilitarianism and duty-based ethics. So what is virtue ethics? One of the three major approaches to normative ethics. Well, it's the ethical theory that's really characterized by a focus on moral character or the virtues. So that's in contrast with duty-based ethics, which focuses on duties, obligations, and rules, or consequentialist ethics or utilitarian ethics, which focuses on the consequences of our actions. So, virtue ethics, the focus is on the virtues, and an example of some of the virtues could be courage or honesty, temperance, loyalty. These sorts of characteristics are the focus of virtue ethics. So, just to start off, consider a scenario where we can think of a person, somebody that needs help. It's just an individual that needs help of some sort. And think about how a utilitarian might deal with that, or how might a Kantian respond to that. So you'll remember last week that we talked, one of the rules in Kantian ethics, or one of the aspects of it, is that we're not responsible for strangers, right? So we talked about this last week. So the one thing that I would say about virtue ethics is that virtue ethics allows us to, or to some extent requires us to consider somebody that needs help, maybe even a stranger. So the virtue ethicist would point out that if we were to help a person, that would be a very charitable or benevolent thing to do, or that would be acting as like a good Samaritan, that you're helping a person in need. And so virtue ethics would consider helping a person, even a stranger, as the right thing to do. Whereas a utilitarian approach might say, well, we should help the person if it maximizes utility or it maximizes the overall happiness. And duty-based ethics might say, well, we should help the person if we decide that it's our obligation or our duty to, such as the example we had last week where the person who's a guardian has a moral obligation. A person who's a guardian of, say, a little child or another person has a moral obligation to look after that child or person, right? So what I should say is that it's not to say that virtue ethicists attend or consider the virtues any more than it is to say that consequentialists attend to consequences or deontologists to rules and duties. It's just that, and we can see that pretty much all of the moral theories make room for the virtues and consequences and duties, right? So there's a little bit of the other ethical theories in each other, perhaps except in duty-based ethics where we should completely ignore the consequences. But we certainly take into consideration virtues in some of the other ethical theories. So we know that both in consequentialism and in duty-based ethics, we consider it to be a moral good to be honest and to be kind or to help people or you know, and to do the right thing. The distinction for virtue ethics is that the virtues in virtue ethics are the central thing to the theory. So as opposed to the consequences for consequentialists or duties for deontologists, right? So virtues and vices are foundational for virtue ethics theories and other, we'll just leave it there. Sorry to stumble a little bit on that. Okay, let's have a look at where virtue ethics emerged from. We can trace virtue ethics back to the ancient philosophers such as Plato and Aristotle, and in the East, Confucius. The writings of Confucius talk a lot about virtues. I've read a bit of Plato and Aristotle, but I have not read Confucius, so I don't know a great deal about Confucius's writings, but we can certainly see that virtue ethics can be traced that far back. And we know that virtue ethics also was very, very dominant in the Enlightenment era, before the previous two ethics that we've looked at began to take over. So before utilitarianism and before Kantian ethics or deontological ethics, virtue ethics, as far as a secular normative ethical theory goes, was probably the most predominant ethical theory at the time. And then once utilitarianism and deontological ethics became popular, it kind of faded a little bit, and it kind of re-emerged when a woman called G.E.M. Anscombe, I'm pretty sure it's a woman, wrote a very famous article called Modern Moral Philosophy. Now, I've put that on the Moodle site for people to read. I wouldn't say it's compulsory reading, but it's definitely a pretty easy read in terms of meta-ethical theory. And that was written in 1958, and it kind of made virtue ethics have a kind of resurgence in popularity. And primarily because Anscombe was quite dissatisfied with utilitarian and deontological approaches. So as we know, all of the meta-ethical theories have good points and faults, and none of them are perfect. They all try to address ethical issues, and some seem to be better in application than others. So what exactly is a virtue? According to most ethicists, an excellent character trait. So a virtue is a disposition that is held within the heart of its possessor, the person that has that character trait. Something goes right to the heart of the person. So, for example, to have a virtue is to be a certain kind of person with a certain mindset. For example, an honest person will tell you the truth because they think that telling the truth is just the right thing to do. So an honest person's reasons and choices with respect to honesty and also dishonesty reflect their very deep-seated views and values about honesty, truth, and deception. You might have heard the saying, she is generous to or honest to a fault. So it's possible that somebody exhibits truly virtuous characteristics, but they're not necessarily a moral person. So think about that just carefully. It's possible that somebody exhibits very virtuous characteristics, but they may not be a moral person overall. Let me give you an example. Think of members of gangs, or, you know, the mafia, for example, or very brutal gangs. Many of these members of these gangs show very, very strong characteristics of loyalty, generosity, and courage. But that aside, they might not hesitate to put a bullet in you for various other reasons, right? So just because you show these types of virtues, it doesn't necessarily say that you're overall a moral person. Also, we might be inclined to think that a virtuous person may act out of emotional inclination rather than rational choice. And we can see this in children who are very nice, well-behaved children. So you see young children who are very nice, well-behaved, nice children, say hello to their parents, friends, and so on. But these children are not necessarily acting out of... they're not necessarily a truly virtuous person. They still have yet to develop the characteristics required because they're only children, right? Aristotle considered this a natural virtue, and he argued that it was kind of a proto version of a full virtue, waiting for perfection, waiting to achieve perfection through practical wisdom. So this concept of practical wisdom is important in virtue ethics. We need to differentiate what is a virtuous, morally mature, what is it that virtuous, morally mature adults have that very nice, well-behaved children lack. We know that both will have good intentions, right? But the child is more likely to mess up things because they might be ignorant of what they fully need to know in order to act in a virtuous way, right? So we know that we teach children ethical good behaviour and ethical behaviour, but they still, even though virtuous adults are not infallible, we would generally hold morally responsible an adult if they messed up. Not so with a child, right? We've already talked about this, or not so with a cognitively impaired person, for example. So practical wisdom is our ability to act virtuously while understanding and dealing with appropriately when things get messed up, right? So, for example, owning up to a mistake or not concealing the truth to benefit oneself. So think about the case of Ben, the software developer, which we looked at in the case study. And we all decided that, you know, the right thing for Ben to do would be to fess up to his boss that he hadn't finished developing his software module. And so the practical wisdom aspect there is the ability to act virtuously while you also understand and deal with the fact that things have gone wrong, or there's a mistake that's been made, and you own up to it, right? So a little bit more about practical wisdom. Generally, good intentions are our intentions to act well or do the right thing. So we can say that practical wisdom is knowledge or understanding that enables its possessor, an individual who has that knowledge or understanding, unlike nice kids or well-behaved kids, to do the right thing in any given situation. Right? So we know that kids don't have the practical wisdom to act right in all situations. They're still learning, right? So two important aspects of practical wisdom. Firstly, it's generally related to life experience. So it involves certain features of certain actions and the people involved. For example, that children or adults are notoriously clueless about precisely because they are inexperienced, right? Just think about that again. So we're thinking about certain aspects of certain features and aspects of a situation, and children that adults get, but the children or adolescents or cognitively impaired people, or maybe even perhaps people with autism, for example, might be completely clueless about. So that's one aspect of practical wisdom. The second is a wise agent's capacity, so a smart moral agent's capacity to recognise certain features of a certain situation are more morally relevant than others, or indeed that a certain situation constitutes an ethical issue that requires consideration. And this is really interesting because I think this is something that our world is starting to, that some people in the world are starting to understand and realise. You know, the Black Lives Matter, for example, aspects to do with racism, aspects to do with sexual harassment, and the Me Too movement and so on. A wise moral agent, which could be a woke person, for example, is starting to understand that these certain situations and features of certain situations have become very morally relevant, right? So I think that's the second important aspect of practical wisdom. So these two aspects combine in the description of the practically wise moral agent as those individuals who understand what is truly worthwhile, what is truly important, what's morally relevant, and thereby advantageous in life. or in short, how we go about living a good life. So that's an introduction to virtue ethics. This podcast has followed the DE03 Metaethical Theories 3 PowerPoint slides, which are on Moodle, up to slide number 9. And in the next podcast, which I'll create tomorrow, because my voice is only lasting for about 15, 20 minutes at the moment due to this ongoing cold that I've been suffering, I'll create the next one tomorrow. So hopefully that has given you a good introduction to virtue ethics, and I'll talk to you all tomorrow on the podcast tomorrow.